And good afternoon. You're listening to Ken Hudnall. This is the Ken Hudnall Show. Coming to you from our studios right here in exciting El Paso, Texas. Gateway to the Old West and the most haunted city in the country. Well, today's July the 7th, 188th day of the year. 177 days remain till the year's over with. I made mention several times of the fact that I'd gone to my congresswoman for assistance as a disabled veteran and been refused assistance because they're too busy taking care of undocumented immigrants. Well, in order to discuss whether or not she's going to help me on this fifth time I've asked, I have to fill out a privacy form and make sure I don't tell anybody. Because remember, her assets, taxpayer dollars, by the way, are being funneled into undocumented immigrants, as near as I can find out. I said, I didn't have anything left over for disabled veterans. I mean, we're just, we serve the country, we help keep everybody's freedoms in place, but we're not entitled to assistance when we have an issue. Oh no, we got to help everybody else. On this day in 1124, the city of Tyre falls to the Venetian Crusade after a siege of 19 weeks. 1456, a retrial verdict acquits Joan of Arc of heresy. 25 years after her alleged death. There's another story, in fact. When she was allegedly burned at the stake, everybody was kept well back from where the funeral pyre was. Far enough back you really couldn't see her features. And the story is she was actually spirited out by friends and came back a number of years later to France. Everybody recognized her, but for it to be admitted what had happened would have made a lot of people look bad, so they never did. 1520, Spanish conquistadors defeat a larger Aztec army at the Battle of Otumba. 1534, Jacques Cartier makes his first contact with the Aboriginal peoples in what's now Canada. 1575, the Raid of the Rediswire. It's the last major battle between England and Scotland. 1585, the Treaty of Nemours abolishes tolerance to Protestants in France. Can't give them an inch. 1667, an English fleet completes the destruction of a French merchant fleet off Port St. Pierre in Martinique during the Second Anglo-Dutch War. 1770, the Battle of Larga between the Russian Empire and the Ottoman Empire takes place. 1777, American forces retreating from Fort Ticonderoga defeated in the Battle of Hubbardton. 1798, as a result of the XYZ affair, U.S. Congress rescinds the Treaty of Alliance with France, sparking the Quasi-War. Now, for those who are not familiar with the XYZ affair, it was a political and diplomatic episode. It took place in 1797 and 8, early in the presidency of John Adams, involving a confrontation between the U.S. and the Republic of France. The name derives from the substitution of the letters XYZ for the names of French diplomats John Conrad Hottinger, Pierre Bellamy, and Lucien Hautefort, and documents released by the Adams administration. Well, there threatened to be a war between us and France in 1797, and we sent an American diplomatic commission. The diplomats, Charles Coatsworth Pinckney and John Marshall and Elbridge Gerry, were approached through the informal channels by agents of the French Foreign Minister, Talleyrand. They demanded bribes and a loan before formal negotiations could begin. Now, though it's widely known that diplomats from other nations have paid bribes to deal with Talleyrand at the time, our diplomats were offended by the demands and eventually left France without ever engaging in formal negotiations. Well, such is what happens at that political area. 1807, the first Treaty of Tilsit between France and Russia signed, ending hostilities between two countries in the War of the Fourth Coalition. 1834 in New York City, four nights of rioting began against abolitionists to begin. 1846, U.S. troops occupy Monterey and Yerba Buena, thus beginning U.S. conquest of California. 1863, U.S. begins its first military draft to field the Union Army during the Civil War. If you wanted an exemption, in other words, if you wanted to be let out, cost you $300, which was a considerable amount in those days. And this day in 1865, four conspirators in the assassination of Abraham Lincoln are hung. Alleged conspirators. 1892, the Katipunan is established, a discovery which by Spanish authorities initiated the Philippine Revolution. The Katipunan was a Philippine Revolutionary Society founded by anti-Spanish colonists of Filipinos in Manila in 1892. Its primary goal was to gain independence from Spain through a revolution. They didn't want to negotiate it. They wanted out now. Okay. 1898, President McKinley signs the Newlands Resolution annexing Hawaii as a territory of the U.S., 1907, Florence Ziegfeld Jr. staged his first Follies on the roof of the New York Theater in New York City. 1911, the U.S., U.K., Japan, and Russia signed the North Pacific Fur Seal Convention of 1911, banning open water seal hunting. That's the first international treaty to address wildlife preservation issues. 1915, the first Battle of the Isonzo comes to an end. Now, that was fought between the armies of Italy and Austria-Hungary on the northeastern Italian front in World War I. And it lasted from June 23rd to July 7th. Now, the aim of the Italian army was to drive the Austrians away from its defensive positions along the Isonzo and Sacca rivers and on the nearby mountains and hopefully capture the Porto Trieste. Now, the Italians had a 2-1 superiority, but their offensive failed because the Italian commander, Luigi Cadorna, employed frontal assaults after very short artillery barrages. And the Austro-Hungarians were dug in on uphill positions, barricaded with barbed wire, which were able to easily resist the Italian assault. Now, the Italians had some early successes, but in the end, the Austrians carried the day. 1915, Colombo Town Guard officer Henry Pidris is executed in British Ceylon for allegedly inciting persecution of Muslims. 1916, New Zealand Labour Party is founded in Wellington. 1928, sliced bread is sold for the first time on the inventor's 48th birthday by the Chillicothe Baking Company of Chillicothe, Missouri. Up until that point, you bought a loaf of bread and cut it yourself. 1930, industrious Henry Kaiser began construction of Boulder Dam, now known as Hoover Dam. 1937, the Marco Polo Bridge incident provides the Imperial Japanese Army with a pretext for starting the Second Sino-Japanese War. That was China versus Japan. 1937, the Peel Commission report recommends a partition of Palestine. That was the first formal recommendation for partition in the history of Palestine. 1941, U.S. occupation of Iceland replaces the U.K.'s occupation. 1944, World War II, the largest bonsai charge in the Pacific War took place in the Battle of Saipan. 1946, Mother Francesca Cabrini becomes the first American to be canonized. Also in 46, Howard Hughes nearly dies when his XF-11 reconnaissance aircraft crashes in a Beverly Hills neighborhood. 1952, the ocean liner the SS United States passes Bishop Rock on her maiden voyage, breaking the transatlantic speed record to become the fastest passenger ship in the world. 1953, Ernesto Che Guevara sets out on a trip through Bolivia, Peru, Ecuador, Panama, Costa Rica, Nicaragua, Honduras, and El Salvador. 1958, President Dwight D. Eisenhower signs the Alaska Statehood Act into law. 1959, Venus occults the star Regulus. This rare event's used to determine the diameter of Venus and the structure of the Venusian atmosphere. 1962, Alitalia Flight 771 crashes in Junnar, Maharashtra, in India, killing 94 people. 1963, Buddhist crisis. Police commanded by the Ngo Dinh Nu, brother and chief political advisor of South Vietnam President Ngo Dinh Diem, attacked a group of American journalists who were covering a protest. That was considered a no-no. 1978, the Solomon Islands become independent from the UK. 1980, the institution of Sharia law in Iran. That's what a lot of folks that are too busy screaming after coming out of their mother's basement want to institute into the U.S. Now, what all these people seem to overlook, the Sharia law is a body of religious law that forms part of the Islamic tradition. Now, there's a small fraction of the people in this country who are of Islamic tradition. Why, in God's name, would we replace our legal system with Sharia law? But there are people who ought to know better, are screaming from the rooftops that it's not right that we don't have Sharia law. In 1980, during the Lebanese Civil War, 83 Tiger militants are killed during what would be known as the Safra Massacre. 1981, President Ronald Reagan nominates Sandra Day O'Connor to become the first female member of the Supreme Court of the U.S. Very nice lady, not the sharpest knife in the drawer, however. I met her, had several conversations with her when I lived in California. She had retired, I think, to take care of her husband, who was not in good health. 1983, Cold War, Samantha Smith, a U.S. schoolgirl, flies to the Soviet Union at the invitation of Secretary General Yuri Andropov. And I'm sure American taxpayer dollars were spent to send her. 1985, Boris Becker becomes the youngest male player ever to win Wimbledon at the age of 17. 1991, Yugoslav War. The Brioni Agreement ends the 10-day independence war in Slovenia against the rest of the Socialist Federal Republic of Yugoslavia. 1992, the New York Court of Appeals rules that women have the same right as men to go topless in public. May have the right, but is that really wise? Look at all the Looney Tunes running around. 1997, Turkish armed forces withdraw from northern Iraq after assisting the Kurdistan Democratic Party in the Iraqi-Kurdish Civil War. 2003, NASA Opportunity Rover. MERB, or Mars Exploration Rover B, was launched into space aboard a Delta II rocket. 2005, a series of four explosions occur in London's transport system, killed 56 people, including four suicide bombers, and injured over 700 others. What have you accomplished by becoming a suicide bomber? 2007, the first Live Earth benefit concert was held in 11 locations around the world. We are the world. Donate money. 2012, at least 172 people were killed in a flash flood in the Krasnodar Kyrgyz region of Russia. 2013, a de Havilland Otter Air taxi crashes in Soldotna, Alaska, killing 10 people. 2016, ex-U.S. Army soldier Micah Xavier Johnson shoots 14 policemen during an anti-police protest in downtown Dallas, Texas. He killed five of them. He was subsequently killed himself by a robot-delivered bomb. 2019, the U.S. Women's National Soccer Team defeated the Netherlands 2-0 at the 2019 FIFA Women's World Cup Final in Lyon, France. And in 2022, today as a matter of fact, Boris Johnson announces his resignation as leader of the Conservative Party. And that's following days of pressure from the members of Parliament during the 2022 United Kingdom government crisis. All these scandals and parties he was photographed at without a mask when he was telling everybody else to wear a mask. Eventually, the chickens come home to roost, and they are roosting big time on Boris Johnson right now. Holidays and observances, Christian Feast Day, out of birth of Farmoutiers, Felix of Nantes, Elidius, Job of Maniava, near Ukrainian Orthodox Church, Willibald in the Catholic Church, Independence Day, celebrating independence of the Solomon Islands from the UK in 1978, Ivan Kupala Day in Belarus, Poland, Russia, and Ukraine, Saba Saba Day in Tanzania, Tanabata in Japan, and World Chocolate Day. Now that's one I can get behind. Alrighty, let's see what else we got. This day in 1124, Tyrus surrenders to the Crusaders. 1438, Charles VII issues the Pragmatic Sanction of Bourges, stating that a general church council with superior power to the Pope must be held every 10 years. In 1495, King Ferdinand II returns to Naples. 1498, Emperor Maximilian I establishes the choir of Imperial Chapel. 1534, European colonization of the Americas. First known exchange between Europe and natives of the Gulf of St. Lawrence in New Brunswick. 1543, French troops invade Luxembourg. Spent some time in Luxembourg. I have to know their McDonald's very well. 1550 on this date, the traditional date chocolates thought to have been introduced into Europe. 1585, King Henry III and the Duke of Guise signed the Treaty of Nemours. French Huguenots lose all their freedoms as a result of that treaty. 1647, people's uprising against high prices and Spanish rule in Naples. On this day in 1668, physicist and mathematician Isaac Newton gets an M.A. from Trinity College in Cambridge. 1742, the Battle of Bloody Marsh. Spanish forces assault British colonial forces on Simon's Island in Georgia and are decisively repelled. 1753, the British Parliament grants Jews citizenship. 1754, King's College in New York City opens up. It's renamed Columbia College. 1799, Ranjit Singh's men take up their positions outside Lahore. 1801, General and Revolutionary Toussaint Louverture declares Haitian independence. 1802, the first comic book entitled The Wasp is published in Hudson, New York. It criticized Republican politicians. 1814, Sir Walter Scott's novel Waverley is published. On this day in 1838, the Central American Federation is dissolved. On this day in 1850, Scottish explorer Edward I reaches Albany, West Australia. This day in 1861, the Battle of Laurel Hill, Virginia. 1862, the Land Grant Act endowed state colleges with federal land. 1863, orders barring Jews from serving under U.S. General Ulysses S. Grant are revoked. On this day in 1865, Mary Surratt, Lewis Powell, David Herold, and George Axelrod executed for their role in a conspiracy to assassinate President Lincoln. However, there's a lot to that story that was never told. Even the Lincoln child, I can't think of his name, who survived the war, was found burning a lot of his father's papers, and he was asked why, because of the historical value they had. And he said it revealed a member of his own father's cabinet who was involved in the assassination, probably the Secretary of War. It's 1875, Jesse James robs train in Otterville, Missouri. 1876, the Hamburg Massacre. White farmers attack a black militia in Hamburg, South Carolina. Seven folks are killed. 1878, Social Democratic United forms in Amsterdam. 1891, Marcellus Berry, American Express employee, is granted four copyrights for what he called traveler's checks. 1908, the Navy's Great White Fleet leaves San Francisco Bay on a two-year voyage around the world to show the flag. 1908, the Democratic Party meets in Denver at the start of their convention. William Jennings Bryan is nominated as presidential nominee. He was the Secretary of State. He didn't win, by the way. 1915, a Great Gorge and International Railway trolley with an extreme overload of 157 passengers crashes near Queenston, Ontario. Kills 15 people. 1923, University of Delaware invents the junior year abroad. They spent that junior year at the Sorbonne in Paris. 1928, I talked about the invention of sliced bread. Sold for the first time at the Chillicothe Baking Company in Missouri. Used a machine invented by Otto Frederick Rothweder. Described as the greatest forward step in the baking industry since bread was wrapped. 1929, Romania and the Vatican signed an accord. 1936, RCA shows the first real TV programming. It was Dancing, a film on locomotives, Bonwit Teller fashion show, and the monologue from Tobacco Road, and some comedy skits. 1941, the Nazis execute 5,000 Jews in Kovona, in Lithuania. 1941, U.S. forces land in Iceland to forestall a Nazi invasion. Also in 1941, Beirut is occupied by Free France and British troops. 1942, German troops march into Voronezh. I think this is in Poland. 1943, the third day of battle at Kursk, the largest tank battle in history. Germans occupied Dobrova. 1943, Eric Hartmann shoots seven Russian aircraft at Kursk. 1943, the Liberator bombers sink the U-517. Okay. 1956, Hancock's Half Hour premieres as a TV show starring Tony Hancock and Sid James. Hancock was a comedian, don't you know? 1958, William Shea outlines plans for a $12 million stadium in Flushing Meadows, New York. 1960, on this date, USSR shoots down a U.S. aircraft over the Barents Sea. On this day in 1961, the one and only Jimmy Hoffa, elected chairman of the Teamsters. 1961. I think that's pretty much brought our history segment to an end. You know, we've been talking about a lot of off-the-wall things. One of which was some of the more bizarre CIA operations. And they're pretty much the ones that came up with the idea of the false flag operation. You know, things aren't always as they seem, especially with the CIA. And that's the strength of the CIA and most other intelligence organizations around the world. For example, there were poison gas attacks in Syria, reported by mainstream American media as being the work of Syrian President Bashar al-Assad, and later it was discovered that it may have been the work of ISIS affiliates. Now, there are still hard-headed people who argue that Assad was behind it, not the least of which was former CIA officers who worked as commentators on CNN and MSNBC. It's believed they're still adhering to the concept of Operation Mockingbird, because they claim that ISIS would have no reason to attack people who are opposed to the current regime. However, those who may have a bit of cynicism in their makeup believe it looks like a very basic false flag operation. Now, a false flag attack or operation is done by one country or organization to make it look like another country or organization carried out the attack. When Germany invaded Poland to start World War II, it was done under the pretense that Polish troops fired on German border checkpoint. The Soviets also performed a false flag attack on Finland in 1939, and the Japanese used a false flag attack as the pretext for their invasion of Manchuria in 1931. The key to a good false flag operation is for it to gain sympathy for one's cause and for nobody to figure out that you actually did it yourself. In fact, a lot of historians believe the arson of the Reichstag, Germany's parliament building in 1933, was actually a false flag operation done by the Nazi Party. A communist was arrested, tried, convicted, and executed for the fire, but a lot of folks believe he was a patsy used by the Nazis. Then we got the sinking of the USS Maine in Havana, Cuba Harbor in 1889. That's also believed by a lot of folks to have been a false flag operation carried out by the U.S. government to create a casus belli to go to war against Spain for control of Cuba. The people who instigate these things always look at what they call the big picture. If the Reichstag fire and the bombing of the Maine were false flag operations, then they're what we might refer to as textbook examples of how it ought to be done. The public will never know for sure if they were legit or actually false flag operations. Everybody involved gets away scot-free. Now, more than likely, the CIA bigwigs were reading up on the Reichstag fire and the Maine bombing when they came up with their own false flag operation called Operation Northwoods. Now, when Fidel Castro became Cuba's dictator in 1959, for those that weren't around then, it was a revolution, a guerrilla insurgency. Most Americans, including the leaders of the country, didn't know what to expect. Now, Castro claimed to be a reformer, and the previous leader of the country, Fulgencio Batista, was actually a caricature of a corrupt Latin American dictator. So a lot of people wanted to give Castro the benefit of the doubt, take a wait-and-see attitude. Now, the mafia loved Batista because he worked with them, and the CIA liked him because he was corruptible. But others in the American government was unhappy to see him go. Now, the downside to that is it wasn't long before it became apparent Castro was a true Marxist communist. And he quickly began nationalizing all foreign businesses in Cuba and started cozying up to the Soviet Union. There were a lot of casinos being run by the mafia in Cuba at that time. And a lot of that money is being funneled to offshore banks. He put a stop to that. And cozying up to, the government, the CIA could, well, you made the mafia mad. That's on you. You nationalize foreign businesses. Well, that really wasn't a great thing to do. And then you started cozying up to the Soviet Union. Well, for a lot of folks in the U.S. government, that was going one step too far. When John Kennedy won the presidential election in 1960, he was a fresh new face on what was a political scene dominated by older men. Still is, for that matter. Look at our president. Look at a lot of folks in positions of power. They should have been retired and put out to the pasture on the golf course long ago. The reality, though, was he continued many of the policies of his Republican predecessor, Dwight D. Eisenhower. Now, Kennedy was moderate on domestic racial issues, but tough on communism globally. And that's how he got involved with more than one CIA operation. When Castro took power in Cuba, the U.S. military and the CIA incessantly lobbied for Kennedy to get rid of the man in the fatigues with the cigar and beard, who was, let's face it, he was just 90 miles south of Florida. And for the most part, Kennedy was in agreement. In fact, he authorized the failed Bay of Pigs invasion in 1961. Had he not withheld the air support he promised, the Bay of Pigs might have ended differently. But short of a full-scale invasion of Cuba, there was only so much Kennedy was willing to do. The CIA, on the other hand, had far fewer restraints than the American president when it came to get rid of a clear and present danger. And as you probably already suspect, the CIA had a large arsenal of tricks it could use to get the job done. Now, the idea behind Operation Northwoods was proposed by the Department of Defense in a 1962 document titled Justification for U.S. Military Intervention in Cuba. The plan was the CIA to use its plethora of assets in the U.S. and Latin America to carry out one or more false flag attacks that could be used to justify a full-scale invasion of Cuba. Of course, some of their plans were a bit crazier than others, and some were just out and out insane. Now, the CIA had many analysts contribute to the idea for Operation Northwoods, but they came up with three potential scenarios they thought were worth following up on. The first one involved launching attacks on the American naval base at Guantanamo Bay, Cuba. CIA officers disguised as Cuban soldiers would attack the base with minimal firepower in hopes of leaving only minor casualties and damages, but meanwhile creating the cover needed for a U.S. invasion. Then Kennedy could go to the United Nations international press and point out that Cuba did in fact represent a clear and present danger to the U.S., and therefore an American invasion was justified. Now, another potential scenario involves CIA and U.S. Special Forces conducting attacks on Jamaica and Trinidad and Tobago, once again making it look like the work of either pro-Cuban communist revolutionaries or Cuban commandos. And the thought in this scenario is that since these countries were former British colonies and still members of the British Commonwealth, the U.K. would support a U.S. invasion of Cuba. Well, when you're talking about diplomacy, of course, any and all help is appreciated. But then came the icing on the cake, so to speak. The craziest scenario involving the CIA conducting bombings and kidnappings and assassinations on American soil. CIA planned to do several terrorist attacks on American soil, primarily in the Miami, Florida area, where most of the Cuban expat community lived. They planned to turn Miami into a slaughterhouse and start a war with Cuba. And that wasn't bad enough. The scenario gets even crazier when you consider who the CIA's Miami targets would have been. But since the CIA was attempting to frame Cuba, they were going to target anti-Castro Cuban dissidents in southern Florida, many of whom were actually CIA assets. And it actually would have been pretty easy since the CIA knew where these people lived, where they worked, their strengths and weaknesses, what security they had. The plan called for the assassinating a few dissident leaders, sinking some boats with Cuban refugees, and maybe hijacking a plane or two. Nothing really big or out of the ordinary, just run-of-the-mill spy-turned-terrorist stuff. And if that didn't work, the CIA would bring their terror campaign into the heartland to make sure Joe and Jane Smith are on their side in the war against Cuba. Well, as much as President Kennedy may have hated Castro, Operation Northwoods was just a step too far, even for him. He shot down the idea in March of 1962, which of course upset the CIA. Some say when Kennedy rejected Operation Northwoods for its sheer craziness, he made himself a target of the CIA. Unfortunately, we'll never know the complete truth of the role, if any, the CIA and Operation Northwoods played in Kennedy's ultimate assassination. Now, as you may have guessed, the CIA has had a long history of doing operations that were unethical, illegal, some say immoral, fattening. These crazy operations involve spying on American citizens, torturing and killing non-Americans, and developing an overly cozy relationship with the mainstream media in Hollywood. Well, we're going to talk about how far the CIA was willing to go to achieve what it wanted. As the Cold War was raging in the early 50s, the American military and the CIA were looking for every advantage they could get. No matter how much these advantages would defeat the purpose of the American effort in defending freedom. The bigwigs in the Army Biological Warfare Laboratories, along with CIA officer Sidney Gottlieb, looked at her current and former enemies for inspiration. Gottlieb was impressed with Nazi mind control experiments in World War II, as well as those supposedly being done by the Soviets at that same time. With his background in chemistry and support from CIA Director Alan Dulles and the Army Brass, Gottlieb was given the green light to begin his own mind control experiments. I'm sure you've heard about Project MKUltra and its notable sub-operation, Operation Midnight Climax, which took place in 1953. And what followed from that was maybe the craziest and most influential of all CIA operations. It's still talked about today. Now, the CIA dosed thousands of unwitting people with the strong psychedelic drug, lysergic acid, diethylamide, better known as LSD. They were going to dose them and then give them subliminal suggestions or triggers, so to speak, and set these triggers up in the minds of the subjects. And then a controller would use the trigger whatever it might be, to get the subs to do various things, from collecting information to maybe even murder. Now, sex also became involved with MKUltra as a way to get subjects to let their guard down, especially after they've been given a dose of LSD or some other psychedelic drug. For those who think LSD is just the greatest thing that ever was, it was developed for use by the CIA. Now, MKUltra took place at a time when so few people knew what LSD was, it was technically legal. But by the time the operation was in full swing in the 60s, things had drastically changed. Some say MKUltra was the true force behind the counterculture movement. Others say that despite the CIA's claims that the program was discontinued in 73, there's still programmed assets and officers among us who are patiently waiting for their triggers so they could carry out whatever mission had been programmed to conduct. Now, long before the hippies of America were tuning in and dropping out on acid and other psychedelic drugs, a Swiss chemist named Albert Hofmann invented the drug in a laboratory in 1938. Now, after his discovery, LSD remained a relatively unknown and illegal drug for quite some time. LSD was actually legal until 1968. So, between 38 and 68, CIA had plenty of leeway with its use of the drug when Project MKUltra got underway in 1953. The agency could legally buy LSD with taxpayer dollars, which it did. It bought up the world's supply of LSD for $240,000. And then it had its own chemist make more. Now, since the CIA used plenty of doses, there were plenty of chances for enterprising young chemists to perfect their craft under the watchful eye of the CIA. But the thing is, since LSD was such a new drug in 53, the officers of Project MKUltra didn't know how much to give subjects or what the effects might be. So when the program was finally ready to go, Gottlieb had officers administer large, powerful doses of LSD to unsuspecting subjects. It's a powerful drug, can give the user feelings of a great euphoria or an incredible despair, all in the same trip, as a session is called. In high-level doses, users often experience intense hallucinations that can be very frightening, especially if the user doesn't even know that they've taken a drug. And that was basically the MKUltra program in a nutshell. Test subjects were surreptitiously dosed with so that when the trip kicked in, they didn't know what was happening. The Army and the CIA both saw great potential in LSD. They believed it could be used in interrogations to break the prisoner's will to resist. And it could be used in more intricate operations, so to speak. Now, Gottlieb believed LSD could be administered to subjects who would then be programmed by CIA psychologists with suggestions. Then the subject could then be activated at a later time with a word, a series of words, or a mnemonic device that acted as a trigger, so to speak. So LSD was given to patients at mental hospitals and the prisoners without their consent, which, although illegal, would hardly raise an eyebrow in 1953. The results showed that the dosed individuals routinely broke down and told the officers whatever they wanted to hear. Now, for the CIA, this was great news. But for Gottlieb, it really didn't demonstrate LSD's true potential. For that, he'd need to secretly dose professionals with military and intelligence backgrounds. Now, people with military and intelligence backgrounds already had the requisite training to be assassins. But for the most case, they still possessed a moral compass and free will, both of which Gottlieb hoped to eliminate through heavy doses of surreptitiously administered LSD. This was accomplished by giving it to CIA officers, military officers in their coffee or food. Civilians were also given strong doses of the drug without their knowledge. And one military officer unwittingly dosed was a captain in the Army Chemical Corps named Frank Olson. And he was a pretty smart guy and a true patriot, which was exactly the sort of person CIA was recruiting in the early 50s. Earned a Ph.D. in bacteriology from University of Wisconsin in 1938. Served in the Army before working for the military during World War II as a civilian contractor. After World War II, the CIA learned of Olson's work on chemical and biological weapons and recruited him to join. Well, like most relatively naive people, he believed he was defending his country. And he enthusiastically climbed the ranks of the CIA, becoming the head of the Special Operations Division in 1952. Now, his first major project was called Operation Artichoke, and that involved administering chemicals to a subject being interrogated into biological officers. After learning of some of the extreme interrogation methods the Chinese and North Koreans used on captured American and Allied soldiers during the Korean War, which involved beatings and threats and deep sleep deprivations and starvation, among other tactics, CIA thought they could do it even better. So before long, Operation Artichoke evolved into Project MKUltra, and Olson became one of its first victims. By November of 1953, he had become disillusioned with the tactics Gottlieb and the CIA were using in MKUltra. Maybe sensing there was a potential problem there, Gottlieb summoned Olson and nine other CIA officers and military officers associated with the bioweapons program in MKUltra to a Maryland wilderness retreat on November 18th, 1953. But it turns out Olson and the others went in rural Maryland for rest and relaxation. Gottlieb made sure the men endured the most bizarre and scariest experience of their lives. Gottlieb dosed the men with LSD, and only later told them they were given a truth serum. We'll probably never know the amount of the drug that these men were dosed with, but since LSD was stronger and unregulated at that time, it's safe to assume they got a pretty hefty dose. After the men spent the weekend losing their grip on reality, they were all unceremoniously allowed to return home. According to his wife, Olson never really came off the trip. Told his wife that people were following him and he was going to resign. Then Olson capriciously changed his mind, decided to keep working with the CIA and the bioweapons program. But unfortunately, by that point in time, the decision was made that he had to go. Olson met with some Army brass and a CIA officer involved with MKUltra in New York City, November 24th. The group gathered at a hotel in Manhattan. The details of their meeting will probably forever be a mystery. What is known, though, is that about 2 in the morning on November 28th, Olson jumped or was thrown from the window of his room to his death. Now, one theory was that Olson was assassinated out of fear he's going to spill the beans on Project MKUltra. The more probable theory is that the high dose of LSD he was administered caused psychosis that resulted in suicide. Either way, Olson's death could have been a setback for MKUltra, but as far as Gottlieb was concerned, the show had to go on. Now, for many organizations, the loss of Olson would be signaled serious problems and the probably end of the operation. But for the CIA and Gottlieb, it just represented a new opportunity. Olson was a potential problem, so with him gone, no matter how it had happened, the CIA could concentrate on new mind control experiments in MKUltra. 1954, Gottlieb decided to bring in officers with the Federal Narcotics Bureau, that's the forerunner of the DEA, to help with his ambitious new operation of MKUltra, Operation Midnight Climax. Now, if you're thinking the name of this operation sounds, let's just say, suggestive, you're right. The CIA does seem to have a bit of a sense of humor, although this extremely crazy operation wasn't so funny to the men caught up in its net. Operation Midnight Climax began in 1954 in the San Francisco and New York metropolitan areas as an expansion of the original MKUltra experiments. But instead of dosing CIA and military unwittingly with LSD, hapless men were targeted. CIA used sex workers to lure men back to CIA safe houses where they'd be clandestinely dosed with LSD and other drugs either before or after sex. And then the CIA would watch them from behind one-way glass mirrors. They weren't looking for any kinky reasons necessarily, but more to catch the men in compromising acts, since some were reported to be influential in their communities. In addition to sexual blackmail, CIA officers used the sex workers to elicit important information from the men and place suggestions in the men's minds while they were under the influence of LSD. By the late 50s, the CIA was regularly dosing random people in several major cities and even expanded their operation to Canada. With the help of Canadian intelligence and British psychologist Donald Cameron, Project MKUltra experimented on hundreds of patients at Montreal's McGill University from 1957 to 1964. Now, the patients thought they were being treated for schizophrenia and other severe forms of mental illness. But instead, Cameron did many devious things to them, such as placing them in comas for days or weeks or months. And then he'd use audio tapes to put suggestions in the comatose patients' minds. MKUltra was supposedly reduced in scale in the late 60s and officially discontinued in 1973 as a church committee began investigating Operation Mockingbird. CIA never revealed exactly how many American citizens became real-life Manchurian candidates during Project MKUltra, but it's believed to be in the hundreds and maybe thousands. What's even more frightening? We'll probably never know how many people have been assassinated by these real-life Manchurian candidates, and how many others are waiting to be put into operation so they can go assassinate somebody. Well, turning from MKUltra, the Vietnam War was probably the messiest, most confusing war in American history. Most Americans really didn't understand what was going on, including people who were both for and against the war. See, the problem with an activist is they want to be an activist. They don't really care what they're being an activist about. And he who screams the loudest gets the most attention, whether you know what you're talking about or not. It was much more complex and brutal than merely helping the South Vietnamese put down a communist insurgency in their country. Now, North Vietnam was constantly feeding supplies to the VC through the Ho Chi Minh Trail, which snaked through both North and South Vietnam and into parts of Cambodia and Laos. Now, Cambodia and Laos were also fighting off communist insurgencies. By the late 60s, there were American military advisors and CIA officers in both of these countries. In Laos, the CIA supported the Hmong people, who were an ethnic group that lived in the northern mountains of the country. The Hmong were opposed to the Laotian communists and fought against the North Vietnamese when they invaded Laos, so the CIA figured the Hmong were the perfect allies. And they did prove to be good fighters and wanted very little for their service. They just wanted to have relative autonomy in their mountainous homes and to live as they had had for centuries. They also wanted to be free to grow and sell their poppy plants. Now, poppy is the Korean ingredient used to make opiates such as opium and heroin, which meant that these fields were very valuable. And although the CIA has denied any involvement with drug trafficking, the evidence clearly shows that several CIA officers were involved in trafficking opium and heroin in and out of the Golden Triangle region of Southeast Asia. That's the borderland of Thailand, Laos, and Myanmar, Burma. CIA admits that some of its officers may have been involved in drug smuggling, but claims the amounts were small and there was never an official drug smuggling program. So, were the CIA trafficking drugs during the Vietnam War in just the, what you might call another crazy CIA mission? Or was it just a few crazy CIA officers getting away with? That's for the observer to figure out. Now, one part of the CIA's operational success was setting up front businesses or groups. This gives the CIA the look of normalcy and allows them to manipulate civilians and potentially use them to make to take the fall if things go south. And this sort of setup enables the CIA to invoke what's known as plausible deniability, which is where officers can claim, truthfully or not, to have no knowledge of a particular operation, which limits their legal liability. In the case of the Golden Triangle drug smuggling, the civilian air transportation company, Air America, gave the CIA that plausible deniability they wanted. Now, Air America originally began as a Chinese civilian airline called Civil Air Transport. And after China fell to the communists, CIA bought the Civil Air Transport outright in 1950 and renamed it Air America. On its face, Air America was a civilian transport company that could deliver people and goods to isolated locations around East Asia. In reality, it was run by spooks who were constantly gathering intelligence using the planes to conduct top-secret missions. By the late 60s, these operations included moving weapons and material in and out of Laos for General Vang Pao of the Royal Lao Army. Now, Pao was a man who was known for cutting corners and being a bit shady, to say the least. Also a humong, and therefore believed to be trustworthy by the powers that be. At least that's what CIA officer Theodore Shackley believed. Now, Shackley was a career intelligence officer who moved his way up the ranks of the fairly new CIA in the 50s and 60s. And after working on Operation Mongoose, which we'll talk about later, he was made the CIA station chief in Laos in 1966. And he was tasked with carrying out the secret war in Laos against communist forces. I mean, he had great leeway with his methods. He used intelligence and methods gleaned from the Phoenix program and basically became a law unto himself, known to bend just about every rule there was. And frankly, the CIA didn't really care about rules anyway, especially when it came to General Powell. See, Powell knew how to get results, so Shackley let him do pretty much what he wanted to do. This including using Air America to smuggle opium out of northern Laos and through the Laotian military base in Long Trinh. What happened after the opium made it to the base and how much the CIA knew about it is still a matter for debate. Well, at this point, we run out of time. I'll be back and talk more about the CIA and some of its crazy operations. Until then, this is Ken Hudnall for the Ken Hudnall Show, saying have a truly great evening.